For the next speaker here, we're honored to have Chief Raymond Yowell from the Western Shoshone National Council to give us an update on the efforts of the National Council to protect the lands and the treaty and protect Shoshone sovereignty. So I'll let Raymond fill us in on this hard road that we're all on here.
Thank you, Chris. I guess a lot has happened since the last year. During the last year, we've fought the payment bill throughout last year. Two trips to Washington where we, very meager resources, and by that I mean money. We had to dig deep in our pockets to go to those the hearing, the first one that was called off when we got there. Very upset over that. Ended up having a meeting under the Capitol, and as we all sat around the table, the opportunity was given to the Shoshone there to speak, to speak and say what they wanted or how they felt about the situation. I guess there was around 14 Shoshones that spoke there, and out of the 14, there was two that would take the claims payment as is. There was one who would take the claimant payment as is, but also wanted land. And the staff of Senator Reed was there and heard these statements. And then in August, they scheduled a hearing again, and this time they did hold a hearing. And the ones that they called in to testify were the two that wanted the money without any conditions and the one that wanted money and land. Even though we were there that wanted other things and were more or less opposed to the way the bill was worded, and it didn't talk about other things. All it talked about was just paying out the money. We didn't get a chance to say anything, even though we did submit written testimony. Anyway, again, we'd submitted one at the March hearing, it's supposed to be, and then we did submit again at the August hearing. Senator Inouye stood there and promised us that he would look at every one of those testimonies, and I don't see how he did with the ruling that came out of that committee, because the committee went ahead and passed the payment anyway. And luckily for us, it did not make it through the Congress due to other things that was happening there. And it was also introduced on the House side, but it never got to a hearing on the House side. But we had to concentrate our resources the best we could over there and submit the testimony on that side as well. Each time these testimonies are printed up, it runs into a little bit of money. Money is very scarce with the National Council because we have no permanent resource that we can draw coins from. So that was a real effort, and it was very discouraging to see the Senate Indian Committee report that bill out, and with all the things that we told them that was wrong with it. These are all factual things and all lawful things. Not just hearsay. It's all based upon fact. And, for Senator Inouye to stay there to make the statement that he would look at every one of them and consider it, I don't see how he could report that bill out with all the things that was against it. And as probably you know, the bills have been introduced again, both on the Senate and the House. They've introduced it early enough this year so that we might not be able to stop it. Right now, we're concentrating a lot of our effort, probably all of our efforts, towards stopping the bill on both sides of the Congress. In relation to that, the National Council has authorized a letter to be sent to the Secretary of State, Colin Powell, requesting negotiations. To back up a little bit, the organization American States that the Dan Sisters had submitted back in the early 1990s, came out with a decision in December of last year. And basically the decision said that the rights of the Shoshone had been violated throughout the whole Indian Claims Commission process. And then in January of this year, the Indigenous Law Institute issued a report of its findings on the Indian Claims Commission's process. And basically what they found out was the act that they passed back in 1946 calls for a final report to be submitted to Congress when a case is completed. And what the Indigenous Law Institute found was that in the West Shoshone case, plus 19 others, the final report was never submitted to the Congress. And so what you have in that case is an incomplete law that they're trying to act on to distribute this money. When the letter was written to the Secretary of State, these two findings of evidence were put in the letter to him, and calling upon him to begin negotiations with the Western Shoshone Nation. That went out in March. We have yet to hear an answer. We sent it registered mail. They did get it. They did sign for it. So we know that it's in their office. It would not surprise me if we don't get an answer back at all on that, because this has happened before. They've just totally ignored it. And other things that have happened, there was livestock confiscations last year from Shoshone. My livestock and those of Myron Taibu from the South Fork Reservation were taken on May the 24th. To back up again, in 1980, the Western Shoshone rejected the Indian Claims Commission award, and they rejected it with a question. They asked the hearing officer, by what United States law did the United States acquire West Shoshone territory? When the hearing officer couldn't answer the question, every Shoshone that testified from there on asked the same question, and when he couldn't answer it, they rejected the claim. I asked the same question, and when he couldn't answer it, I rejected the claim. Shortly thereafter, Duckwater Reservation, Yamba Reservation, and the South Fork Reservation, along with the Dans, quit paying the BLM. And we did that from South Fork with a letter to the BLM stating what we had asked at the hearing of record. Until you show us, by your law, how you legitimately acquired West Shoshone territory, we're not going to pay you. And so for 19 years, up to last year, for 19 years, the BLM held back. And finally, last year, they had the guts enough to go ahead and take the cows of myself and those of Myron Taibo. Not only did they violate what we would call Indian treaty law, but they violated their own law in that no due process was given myself or Myron. And when I say due process, they did not go to their court and obtain a court order to seize our private property. The sheriff was in on it. The district attorney was in on it. They claimed that the district attorney said that their papers were in order. I'd like to see those papers, how they justify the taking of livestock without a court order. And, of course, our cattle were, I think, a week later sold at an electronic auction for about maybe a third or maybe one-fourth of what they're really worth. Myron and I are still looking at how to, get our value back out of our property. And we're having problems with finding a lawyer. Lawyers want a lot of money. We don't have money. So we're looking for a lawyer who would do it on a contingency or even pro bono. But we haven't found one yet that's willing to do that. Following that confiscation in September 23rd, they came here on the other side of the mountain up here and confiscated Marion Carey's livestock. It was like a military action, I guess you could say. About 40 people running around with guns, cordoning off various areas, and we weren't allowed to go in very close to observe what was happening. We did eventually get through the road that they had blockaded when the Eureka County Sheriff came and said they couldn't blockade the road. But when we arrived at the roundup, we couldn't get off the road or we'd be arrested. So those are two events that happened within the last year that, in my opinion, are serious breaches of law. When the United States can come in and take property without the proper court order, you know, in their system, then there's something wrong with this country. Now, previous to that, in the year before, they had confiscated two white people's cattle who were not paying the BLM for a different reason. They had their own reasons. And they took their cows also without a court order, and the sheriffs in their counties did not have the guts to stand up to them. Now, there's instances throughout the West where sheriffs have stood up to the BLM and they demanded a court order, before the BLM can, seize any livestock, and the BLM is backed off. But here in Eureka County and in Elko County, the sheriffs does not have the guts, and the district attorney doesn't have the guts to stand up against the United States. Those are the big events that happened. The National Council continues, we have our monthly meetings. It's always in Austin unless there's a special, the council makes a special meeting time somewhere else. And the usual events are always talked about. We're opposed to Yucca Mountain, the high level of nuclear waste that's proposed to be stored there. We're opposed to that for a couple of reasons. The first is that we haven't given the United States our territory to put that stuff there. That's our stand on that. The second one is that it's a health danger. The atomic testing that has gone on down there, did horrific damage to Mother Earth. Our spiritual belief is that, as Corbin has said, that Mother Earth is where everything comes from. This is what all life comes from. And to go in and blow, 800 atom bombs in her, I don't know, that's pretty sick. To me, I'm just an average kind of a rancher kind of a guy, but they, since 1946 or 1945, they found out these things would blow up. So what more do they need to know? They know how to blow it up, and that should be it. But no, they continue to test and test and test, and in that way have contaminated that ground down there. That will be, unusable for thousands and thousands of years to come. Some of that stuff that's in those bombs have a half-life of 40,000 years, some of them longer than that. One of the things that came out here 6-7 years ago was that they're mighty learned scientists, that have probably more better minds than us sitting right here. The educated ones found out that the water was flowing underneath the test site. Had they come to our spiritual person before they ever started this, our spiritual person would have told them that, yeah, the water is moving in underneath, the test site. I can compare that to our bodies. Our blood veins is what keeps us alive. The water that runs through Mother Earth is what keeps her alive. Mother Earth is a living being. It's in her own way. Not like we are sitting here, but in her own way. It's the same as a tree that's grown out here. That tree has a life, not like us, but in its own way. And so the Mother Earth is the same way. And so the danger to that I see with the water being contaminated, sometime, we don't know when, this water is going to surface somewhere in somebody's water supply, because there's no way in hell that they'll stop that spread of the nuclear contamination underground. There's just no way they're going to do that. So they have, in effect, poisoned maybe the whole West Coast eventually, and maybe further. The other thing that we're against Yucca Mountain for is the health reasons, because the radiation, it doesn't care what color our skin is, even though we may individually have different levels of resistance to radiation, it's going to affect us all. We feel that that our young people that are being affected by diabetes, various kinds of cancers, kidney problems, heart problems, we're having young people die from heart attacks. That was unheard of before the atomic age came into being. And so we feel that the exposure to radiation at some time in some place, at whatever level, has an effect on the way that our bodies age. And when you're zapped by the radiation, you don't know it. And it may shorten our lives, maybe 10, maybe 15, maybe 20 years that we would have normally lived had we not been exposed to radiation. So that's the second reason that we're opposed to it. Right now, they're trying to figure out a way to get the casks down there. They're looking at a railroad that they're going to have to build. And from a couple of different places, they're looking at bringing it in over the highways. But when you look at that, there's tremendous problems, a lot of cost involved with that. If they go with a railroad, tunnels have to be dug through various mountains because the trailer that they're going to transport it on, I'm told, is about as long as a football field. And with that long of a trailer on the road, you can't make very many sharp turns. The railroad, one from Carlin and maybe one from Caliente, there's mountains that's in the way that they're going to have to tunnel through because there's no straight valley from where the railroads are now to get down to Yucca Mountain. So we're using all of that we know to try to stop the storage of high-level nuclear waste at Yucca Mountain. The other thing is to let you know the kind of people that are behind this. When they first laid out the plan or laid out the criteria for the storage of high-level nuclear waste, there was certain criteria that was laid out. It has to meet these levels. When they started digging in Yucca Mountain, immediately they could not meet the first level. So then the Congress, the powers that be, knocked out some of the requirements, make it easier. Then the second time they couldn't meet that criteria. So then they lowered it again a third time, and then they lowered it again a fourth time. So you can see that they're bound and determined to put the stuff there, even though it's proving to be unsafe to their criteria they had set up to begin with. And this radiation is bad stuff. Now, the Shoshone Nation position on that is to quit making it. You got enough out there now that they can't handle. And the perception is that if Yucca Mountain is approved, it's going to solve the high level of nuclear waste. You know, it's not, because they're going to continue to make it. Not going to stop. Matter of fact, the Bush administration, I've heard, is proposing 50 more atomic electric plants. So you got that much more radiation that's going to have to be disposed of. And then if you look down the years, say you look down the years, 1,000 years, 2,000 years, 3,000 years, whatever, and the United States is not the only one that's producing this stuff. There's countries around the world that's producing this stuff. So in that length of time, with all the waste that's going to be generated, at one point they're going to run out of place to put it, where it's not going to affect human health. So it's a bad thing, and that's why the Shoshone Nation has said the best thing to do with it is to quit making it. You can't handle what you have now. I think that's main points that we have. The Shoshone Nation, like I said, it meets monthly. One of the big things we're doing right now is to fight against the payment of the claim, because that is one of the big levers that we have against the United States. They have not showed us to this day how they legally acquired our territory. If the payment of this claim, then the United States will say to the international scene, we paid them for their land, and it'll be a way out for them, you know, as far as international people are concerned. And that's our big lever, because right now they can't. And what they had hung their hat on, even in the Dan case when that came out of the Supreme Court, that when the Supreme Court ruled that we lost our land because the Secretary of Interior accepted the claim on our behalf, that is now found to be illegal and incomplete. So the biggest thing they have against us now is not even there, even in their law. And we intend to work on that. And I would encourage everybody who's here to fight from that, to oppose that from that point. The thing that we're saying to every congressman and everybody who will listen is that there is now no statutory basis for the distribution of Docket 326K, because the statute that was there is incomplete. That's one line that we're using. you know. And whoever wants to do that as individual Shoshones or others who are supporters, we encourage them to use that wording, that there's no statutory basis now to distribute the claim. I think that's probably enough. Thank you very much.